Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, we talk to British composer and vocalist Viv Corringham about her shadow walks and urban song paths. Viv now lives in Minnesota in the USA, and this interview was recorded using internet telephony. I'm particularly intrigued by the shadow walk where you ask people to walk you along, what is it, their favourite route or something that they're particularly familiar with?
I usually phrase it as a special walk. It's really more finding a walk that's part of people's lives. I'm very interested in the everyday, really. I like people's relationship with places that are very familiar to them. So, you know, if I ask them for a favourite walk, they'll take me somewhere that's very beautiful. And I'm actually more interested in a walk that they have a kind of attachment to, that's more embedded in their lives.
And how did you come out with the idea in the first place?
I don't know, really. I've often wondered about that. I was sort of doing it by myself, I suppose, for quite a long time. I was just walking, you know, randomly, kind of like a flaneur in London, just singing with the environment and recording that. And then after a while, I started to want to know more about the places where I was walking. And I noticed that there were certain places that I felt very attached to. And I would walk the same route over and over again. And I call those urban song paths for various reasons.
I've done one for the River Lee, and I was quite intrigued because A, to find out what an urban song path was, and B, the River Lee is not far off the Olympic Stadium site. So I imagine there's all sorts of things going on there, and the sounds that one might hear there might be very different from the ones you heard when you did that. Do you want to sort of talk about what an urban song path is, or is that a piece of work that you're no longer doing, or has it sort of morphed into shadow walks?
I think sort of yes, yes and yes, really. I'm not doing them at the moment, but I think that, well, I maybe am doing them. I'm not too sure. I think that they're a sort of genre that are still at the back of my mind. But yes, I will tell you what they're about. I was reading the anthropologist Stephen Feld. And I don't know if you know his work, but he's done a lot of work with the Kaluli people of Papua New Guinea. And he describes their thing that they call the song path, which is basically somebody is singing and they're singing a route. They're not going on the route while they're singing it, but they're singing it to an audience who would all be familiar with that route. And it could be, oh, I don't know, the route where you could find a particular kind of fruit or where you could find water or maybe the route that some bird takes when it migrates. But it would be a route that meant something to the people listening and linked them with their past and their ancestors. And what Stephen Feld ends up by saying is that knowing where you are is knowing who you are. And I was very intrigued by this and kept thinking about how that related to me living in London, you know, where I feel like I don't feel that located, I don't at all now because I'm living in Minnesota. But most of the people I know in London, you know, don't have an ancestry there and are probably there exactly for the opposite reason, you know, they want to get away from that and that they want to relocate themselves. And so I suppose it was just that started with an exploration of what it meant to be in a place that maybe you didn't feel you belonged in and to look at the sort of social and cultural and historical functions of particular routes. So I thought I would do a sort of similar kind of journey to the Kaluli people, you know, and water is one of their things. So I thought I'd take two journeys, one by a certain section of the River Lee, which does exist, and one by a river that doesn't exist anymore, which was the River Fleet. You know, read up as much as I could about both of those and to a certain extent used those words as I was walking along because, you know, I'm a vocal improviser, so I sing as I walk. And so I used the text and that was really what the urban song paths were. And they went slightly on the back burner because what happened was when I'd finished these walks, and I guess I repeated them maybe 30, 40 times each, and I formed a terrific attachment just from walking over the same ground over and over again. And it occurred to me at the end of that particular Two River project, that other people must also have an attachment when they walk over ground very often. And I wanted to know what it was, you know, what places other people would choose. And that really led me into this project, Shadow Walks, that has kept me busy for about 4 years now.
Tell us a little bit more about them. What's involved in a shadow walk?
Okay, so I ask somebody, what is a walk that is special for you? And usually they choose a walk that they've repeated many times and that has some sort of significance in their life, you know, or at least, you know, it might just be to the local shop and back, but it's something that's really part of their lives. So then the first part is that I walk with them and they tell me about the walk and why they choose it. And, you know, we just chat. It's not an interview. It's just a conversation.
And you don't record that?
I do record that.
Okay.
Yes, and I use quite a lot of it actually later. Then I go back on my own without the person later on. I've already listened to the recording by then, and I've got some idea of what I perceive to be the specialness of that walk. So when I go along and when I'm singing, I'm trying to sing with that walker in mind and with the particular quality or characteristic of the walk, which might be a mood or it might not be. You know, it could be many different things. But there's usually something that's quite strong in a walk, and that's what I choose to focus on as I sing. So then I end up with a sung walk. This is not performance, by the way. This is all very quiet. I'm using little binaural microphones that fit to the ear. So you can sing really quietly. I mean, much, much quieter than most people on a mobile phone. So then I end up with all these different recordings, and I sometimes go back again and I'll do a recording just of the characteristic sounds that I may have noticed on the walk. And then I put all these into the computer, put them through an editing program, and I'll come up with one piece that, you know, combines elements of them. And I'm sometimes taking about 30 hours worth of material and maybe getting it down to about 10 minutes, very much my approach to their walk in the end.
Interesting. What's the reaction you've had from the people you've gone walking with when they've listened to this?
It's funny. I haven't actually had very much reaction from them because they often don't come to the performance. I mean, I always send them a copy and they they always write back very politely and say, oh, this is very creative, very interesting. But I don't really know if what they think of it. A few people have really liked it, but they've tended to be musicians and sound artists. So I have no idea, really. I'm thinking I must do more on that, actually. I must go back and talk to them about it sometime. But often I'm already somewhere else by then, so it can be a bit difficult. Reaction from people who come to the installations is usually pretty positive. It's been one of the more popular things I've done, to my surprise, because it can sound very strange. You know, it's a mixture of singing, people talking, and environmental sounds. It's not obviously appealing, and yet I think people can get out of it what they want. You know, that people in comment books have often mentioned that they really like the environmental sounds or they like the singing, you know, and it says they haven't quite noticed the talking. Other people have heard it more like oral history and have just been very interested in the stories that these people have been telling.
You know, I wonder whether it's a sort of curiosity that we all have, and we hear snatches and snippets of things and we don't quite know what they all add up to, but they're just interesting in themselves. I listened to the one you had, which was in the machine, and that seemed to be a chap who was sort of, I don't know, walking through the airport, or I don't know where he was walking, but it was just the sort of snippets that came away. You know, you heard the snippet and then you heard some interesting sounds. And
in the machine act, it's actually a 10-minute piece, and it was made, I had a composer residency last year at Cal State University in Los Angeles. And I was very keen to go to Los Angeles because everyone told me that nobody walks. But I thought, well, on a university campus, they must be walking. So I went there for a couple of weeks. And actually what that is a compilation of many different walks. And I decided to do that rather than just do single. I mean, I should rewind a little. I did everybody's walks separately. But then when I was editing, as the walks overlapped and as they covered the same sort of territory, you know, literally and figuratively so much, I decided it would be better to do a kind of mixed composite walk. So you hear 13 different people, students and staff, on that piece. And they're all kind of crossing the campus and, you know, going in and out of the buildings.
Back in January, when you I came to that meeting, you talked about one particular thing, which was someone who their child to school, and when they walked back home, they found the house was empty.
The walk was about to come to an end because his youngest son would be going up to secondary school that summer and wouldn't need his dad to take him. So it was coming to the end of an era in a way. I was very interested in the kind of dynamic of the walk, you know, because it had very clear different areas to it. Like, it started out in the house with a huge panic to get ready to go because we were late, and then the walk to school had its own character, which was a very sort of jolly and funny one because his son was very entertaining. And then there was like a pause as we dropped the son off at school and waited for him to go inside. And then we slowed down because we weren't in a hurry. And we came back to the house. It was a circular walk. And as we got nearer, John started to say how odd it is to go back to the house. You go in and you can smell the breakfast and you can see all the pots still there. And you have this feeling of, you know, oh, now what? So that, you know, and I suppose this was a sort of foreshadow of the big now watch, you know, when the kids leave home altogether and that sort of whole empty nest thing. So a little bit of kind of melancholy came into the walk, and I really liked that shape. So when I went to do my own walk, my own singing walk, I very much used that as a score, as a sort of for the shape of or the mood that I would use too.
The children had grown up to such an age that they wouldn't want to walk with their parent.
So it's like it's all, you know, they're all moving away and it's that sort of inevitable time thing, you know. I guess I'm very interested in that. You know, I think one of the things that I like about the shadow walks is this element of memory and people's own history. You know, I'm very happy that this project actually really lets that come out, as well as the relationship with place. You know, it's very much a personal place. You know, my walk down a road might be the same road, but it's not the same as someone else's walk down a particular road. And I think all those things are very resonant.
The shadow walks, is that a sort of planned project to last for a certain length of time, or is it just something that you do occasionally as you go along?
I guess I do it most of the time, really. I think I thought when I began it, which was about 4 or 5 years ago, I assumed that I would have moved on to something else by now, but it's sort of proved so interesting. And it's actually got me to such a lot of great places. I mean, partly because I have had a few residences, and I was actually really lucky. I arrived in Minnesota and I got a funding for a whole year to do it. So that let me go all over the place. So last year I traveled around America and to places that were new to me, and, you know, did the Shadow Walks project in all these different places, which it was wonderful. But I don't feel it's worn out yet. You know, as I carry on, I keep finding new interest in it, I suppose.
How do you select the people that you're going to do the Shadow Walk?
Yeah, that's always something I worry a lot about in advance, and always turns out to be really easy when I get there. If an art gallery or something or a university are sponsoring me, then they will organise an artist talk, you know, because that's what they do. So I arrive and I give a talk, and at the end of the talk I ask for volunteers, and I've always got some out of it. And usually, even if I only get two, they'll say, oh, but you should try so-and-so, you know, I'll give you his number. And it's just expanded. Usually I end up with more than I can deal with, actually, but I can never say no, because I always think how interesting the next person is going to be too. And so yeah, I just do meet them. I'm not sure how.
And of the different places where you've walked, and not just the people, but of the places, are there any places that sort of resonate with you and that you'd like to go back to again?
Yes, there's one actually in the very north of Minnesota called Grand Marais, and it feels like a frontier town. It's right on the edge of Lake Superior, and it's about as far as you can go before you're in Canada. And there's such an interesting bunch of people living up there, because they've gone because it's wilderness, basically. There's just hundreds of miles of wilderness around you, and then this huge lake, which has its own sort of like sea-like quality. And that's very beautiful, very kind of bleak, and yeah, wonderful community. I kind of got to know them very quickly. And I met people who go to the North Pole regularly. They're explorers, and I met artists. And that's the place I would really like to go back to. And I guess Cork, you know, which I do go back to a lot in Ireland. That was the first place that gave me a residency. The people of Cork were incredible. I mean, they were all poets. You know, they almost made me cry. The things they said were just so beautiful, and, you know, such a lovely way of looking at life. And I walked with quite a few elderly people there, and that, I really enjoy that too.
So let's try and find out something about you and walking. Is it something that you've always been a walker, or is this something that you thought, well, I want to explore walking as a part of my art practice, or especially now that you're in North America, where probably, I've no idea, but I'm just guessing that it's probably a bit anachronistic to go out for a walk.
It's a very odd thing to do, especially to go for a walk to somewhere. There are little groups of women that are walking about, but they're doing it in a very purposeful, rather joyless way. You know, it's very fast walking. So it's very different from the kind of walking I'm doing, which is more strolling and looking about me and actually going somewhere quite often, to the shop or something. So, yes, it's very odd to do it here. But I've always been a walker. I've always loved walking. Even when I was pretty young, I would sort of set off to see if I could do 20 miles in a day or something. You know, in fact, I got picked up by the police once when I was about 13 because they they thought I must be a runaway because I was walking. I was so far away from anywhere. I was a bit stupid, really, for a long time because I was doing all this sound work that involved place, and I was also doing this walking because that's just something I do, and it took me a really long time to notice that that would be an ideal way to bring the things together, to bring the work with, you know, something that's a daily pleasure anyway. And walking is such a great way of really feeling and sensing a place. You know, it's the best way of getting to know a new town or a new city. It's the first thing I want to do is go out and have a walk, you know. But I guess in terms of the art that I do, it also coincided with me hearing about these binaural microphones, because they are so easy to carry. They're two very small microphones, and they sit just by your ear. Ears, and they adjust for the sound that arrives at your ear in the same way, more or less, as your ear does, you know, because of the sound waves bending around your head and all of this. So they take all that into account, and what they give you is a very three-dimensional kind of stereo when you listen back on headphones. It's almost as though you're walking too. As soon as I heard that, I just thought, this is wonderful. I can take people on walks. You know, if a dog barks just behind you, you really spin round, even when you're just listening to the recording with phones, because it's that realistic and it's that placed in a way. And I, you know, I've always thought if I was ever to become a journalist or an interviewer in any way, I would do it through walking. Because I've been amazed how complete strangers open up to me in such an amazingly sort of vulnerable and generous way, you know, that I'm often saying to people, you do know I'm recording. Don't forget, I'm recording. If you say anything you don't want me to use, just let me know, and I won't. Because I think people forget. And I think there's several factors to that. You know, I think the fact that you're side by side, you're not sitting across the table looking at each other, that makes for a very free and easy relationship. So you don't feel embarrassed about this person that you don't know. And I think the movement of walking, for me, has always been a really good way to get ideas flowing. I mean, it's kind of cliche, everybody knows that. But there's something about when you're talking to somebody and, you know, you're walking as well, then I think that the conversation really gets going.
Can you tell me what your three favourite walks might be?
Oh, three favourite. Well, one I think would have to be the walk by the Lee, which went through Canning Town and ended up at Trinity Boy Wharf. One of the things I really loved about it was the fact that it went through this factory called Pura Food, which hissed, and it just sounded like a whole lot of strange animals and creatures. And I absolutely loved it. And I went back just for sentiment last time I was in London in January, and I was very disappointed to find that the factory is closed and the footpath actually goes all the way around now, so you can't walk through that area. But that was one of my favourite walks. And I guess another one is one I'm doing at the moment. I'm doing a rather odd project, which again, I was slightly vague about whether I'm still doing urban song paths, because I think this may well be one. It's certainly not a shadow walk, where I'm walking through the skyways in Minneapolis. Minneapolis was the first American city to build this network in the downtown area where you can walk for miles indoors.
This is because the temperature is so harsh,
yes.
Or so. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So you can walk between businesses, to shops, to parking lots, you know, the whole area linked by skyways. And from time to time, of course, they cross the road. And materials are lovely because they're steel and glass. So they look incredible in the sun. And you're looking out the window of the skyway and you see lots more crossing the road further ahead. And there's something really kind of in that rather old fashioned futuristic way, you know, that this real science fiction from the 60s or something. So I kind of love those. I'm doing a lot of recordings in there and also photographs, but I'm being fairly discreet because there is quite a high security presence. And I suspect this is probably all, you know, this private property business is pretty intense in America. I think someone would stop me if they realised what I'm doing, but I don't think they do.
So, well, I asked you for three, that's two.
You did, yeah, that's two. You know, another one that I, this is a really bizarre one. I've actually joined something called the Avatar Orchestra that takes place in Second Life. I take my avatar on walks through Second Life, but some of these walks are very strange and something very American about them because, you know, my avatar is usually the only one who's actually out for a walk. So she's very like me in some ways. You know, I go to these places, these zones that have been created, and just walk as far as I can till I get to the end, and then teleport myself to somewhere else and walk through there.
So it's interesting because, you know, I asked whether you could recommend some walks, and apart from possibly the Skyways, where you talked about steel and glass, all the walks you've chosen are obviously based around sound, the sounds that you hear, rather than what you saw. But when you talked about the River Lee, you just said you like listening to the factory. It's intriguing. You've been involved with sound and sound recordings and being a musician and composer. You're making recommendations on the basis of what people could hear. And I'm sure most people who recommend walks do it because they say it's got lovely views.
Yeah, I suppose though for me it's more about, I mean it obviously is about sound, but it's also more about my relationship with the place. And I noticed that with the shadow walks, the places people choose are very, very seldom beautiful walks. Very seldom. You know, that's a whole different thing, I think. Walking for that, you know, communing with nature or for beauty, I think is a different mindset from what I'm interested in, which is much more about that kind of daily walk, that daily relationship with the ground that you walk on, you know, where you remember it. And I like to kind of imagine that it sort of remembers you as well. And as part of your history is there. So it's that kind of grittiness that I like, I suppose, about a place. And that seems to be that other people like as well. You know, as I say, the places people take me to are mundane walks, really.
Thank you very much, Viv.
Oh, it's wonderful what you're doing. Thanks so much for inviting me.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities. In this episode, you've heard from British composer and vocalist Viv Corringham. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Please follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Talking Walking is written, recorded, and produced by Andrew Stuck at Rethinking Cities Limited. Our logo artwork was created by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music was composed and produced by Simon Sanders.